Welcome to Garden Talk. I'm Jill Nadeau. Thanks for spending some of your time with us on the Larry Mueller Show today. We are talking about plants that make your spring garden beautiful with Lindsay Hendricks. She's the horticulture manager at the Green Bay Botanical Garden. And we'll also talk to her about what's happening in the garden now at the Botanical Garden and your garden and what we can look forward to in this season. Do you need plant suggestions for maybe a bare spot in your spring garden? Do you have a plant that's maybe not looking so great now that the snow is gone? Well, what other gardening questions do you have in mind? Join in by calling 800-642-1234, or you can send an email to talk@wpr.org. Lindsay, thanks for being with us today.
Thanks for having me, Jill. I'm excited to be back.
Well, it's always good to have you here and find out what's going on up in Green Bay, one of our best gardening areas in the state, because it's such a beautiful place to visit. So what's peeking out right now for you guys?
Well, we had some warm temps and some rain last night. And when I drove into the garden this morning, we have leaves popping on some of our trees, our cornelian cherries in the front of our main building are blooming now. Some of our early magnolias are starting to open up. Daffodils, spring blooming bulbs. So spring has sprung here at Green Bay Botanical Garden, and every day more and more keeps coming up. It's amazing. It's very welcome this time of the year.
It certainly is. And I don't know if it's just me, but it seems like spring happens faster and faster every year.
Yeah, it seemed like it took forever to get here. We had a right. lot of rain up in the Green Bay area the last couple of weeks. But we've had some warm temperatures, and I think Mark, our director of horticulture, said we are a little bit ahead of where we typically are. So we're not really complaining, but you know, we have a lot to do in spring to get the gardens cleaned up and looking good for the visitors that are coming back. So, you know, spring is always very busy, but you know, it's a special time of year because the garden starts waking up and, you know, we get to get outside a little bit more again.
Yes, I was just looking at my flower beds this morning thinking, my gosh, those weeds certainly have had a really good start this year. So,
yeah.
You know what I'll be doing this weekend. So what does cleaning up the garden mean for you at the Botanical Garden?
Well, at the Botanical Garden, we typically do the majority of our cutback in fall, just because spring is so hectic and busy. But we do a lot of the cleanup of like leaves that fall off the trees after, like a lot of the oak trees hold onto their leaves quite a while. So we clean up leaves out of the lawns, pick up sticks from storms and snow that have blown all over the place. We straighten all of our labels throughout the garden so everything looks good for the guests that come through. We have to cut back some of our perennials that we left up over winter for our habitat plants, for all of our native bugs and pollinators and, you know, all that stuff. So we've just a lot of things everywhere. But, you know, nature never hurries, yet everything is accomplished. So it all gets done. And, you know, it's always something for us to do.
So much to learn from that particular statement,
yeah,
right?
Yes, yeah. Exactly. That's what we're living by this time of the year.
That's so true. Now, you have a really nice article that your marketing and communications coordinator, Rachel Mueller, had written about what to look for right now. And so you've got a lot of bulbs. It's out on your website. It tells you what to look for at the gardens. Yep. Tell us about some of the bulbs, and then and also add in some hellebores. So that's not a bulb, though, is it? A hellebore?
No, a hellebore is actually considered, well, it is a perennial. So it, you know, comes back year after year. You can plant it whenever you get a plant for it. But they are very early blooming. They're probably one of the earliest blooming perennial plants that we have here in the garden. But most of what's coming up now, you know, is our spring blooming bulbs. So we have a lot of daffodils, hyacinths, crocus, grape hyacinths, alliums, a lot of things. I can't even name them all. we have over 300,000 throughout our garden displays. So we do have a couple tulips here and there, but we've had a lot of creature pressure the last couple years. So they kind of the deer and rabbits and chipmunks had a three-prong approach to our tulips last year, and This year we kind of took a little bit of a break. We have a couple in some spots, so we're not as heavy on the tulips as we usually are, because it does take a lot of our staff time to spray liquid fence and try to clean up after them digging around. So we have quite an assortment here at the garden. So every week, every day, something new is popping up. So our marketing team does a really good job of posting what's in bloom updates on our website and social media. So if you don't follow our Instagram or Facebook accounts, I suggest everybody does, because they do a really good job of sharing what's going on in the garden with a lot of our horticulture team too from time to time.
Yeah. And your website is GBBG, pretty easy to remember, GreenBayBotanicalGarden.org. Yes. So you can go there and get all of that information. Why is it important for us to have these early bloomers in our yard?
Well, the first thing we really notice is it's a really great food source for your pollinators when they start waking up. So there's lots of bees and little hoverflies, you know, their first food of the season, but it also gives you color when, you know, everything else, a lot of the perennials are just starting to poke out of the ground. So, you know, having a variety of spring blooming bulbs, as well as a variety of perennials, trees and shrubs that bloom at different times of the year, gives you more color for a longer time of the growing season. So there's always something in bloom at the garden here, at your garden, at your home. You know, the spring blooming bulbs really are kind of like that first pop of color that we have, and it kind of just makes everyone happy when they see it start coming out of the ground and everything blooming, because then we know spring is here.
Right. And one of the things that we tend to, sometimes we miss them because they're kind of like here and gone, are the spring ephemerals. Mm-hmm. And you've got a number of those too in the gardens, don't you?
Yes, we do. We have them kind of throughout the gardens. Most of them are probably in like our natural woodland areas. Virginia bluebells, I know, are one that we have. They're starting to poke out of the ground. I haven't gotten to see if they're starting to bloom yet, but they are coming up. We have some native lady slipper orchids in our woodland garden. I know like the bloodroot, especially at my house, is blooming and almost done already. Trilliums come up. We have a lot of different things throughout a lot of our natural, more natural areas. And I know our Bell Children's Garden, we have an area back behind our tree houses where we planted a lot of spring ephemerals and everything around the paths. So when people are walking up to the tree houses this time of the year, you know, there's something to see there too.
I know when I was a kid, those seem to be the ones that I just noticed the most, probably because winter was finally over. So,
yes.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. Now, we have to remind people, though, that it may seem like, you know, that everything's going to be lovely for, you know, forever, but we can still have some cold days, can't we?
Yeah, we can. I remember a couple of years ago, we had really early warm spring, it seemed like. And then I think that May 20th, we had a really cold freeze almost. So all of our spring containers, thankfully, a lot of that stuff can handle the cool. But, you know, our magnolias don't really appreciate that, because if their flower buds get around freezing, below freezing, they're going to turn brown and fall off and not look very good. So, you know, don't be rushing out to your garden centers to buy your warm season veggies like your peppers and tomatoes or any of that stuff quite yet, because a little early for that to start. But a lot of the cool season crops like pansies, alyssum, even some of the cool season veggies like the brassica family, you know, can handle the cooler temps. So, you know, if you want to buy them, plant them, you know, that's probably okay. But I would hold off on like all your summer containers, vegetables, until probably closer to the middle or the end of May. Because Mother Nature, we can't control her. We just kind of have to roll with the punches. So here at the garden, we do watch the weather a lot before we start hardening off some of our annuals, which we already have our spring stuff set to go. We're starting with our petunias next. And each week we start trying to bring more and more outside to get used to being outdoors so we can get it into the garden as quickly as possible. And plus our greenhouses are filling up awfully fast with all of our plants these next couple of weeks. So You know, just keeping an eye on the weather is very important. You know, if you have stuff outside that you can cover up, but thankfully a lot of our perennials and either spring blooming bulbs, you know, they can handle it a little cooler. They know if they come up early, they can handle a little bit of the cold, and the stuff that likes it warmer will start growing later because they just know how to listen to nature and when the right time to come up is.
So what do you, what's your process for hardening off those more tender plants?
Yeah, so we usually start with, you know, like your cool season plants that can handle it cooler. Like for us, our pansies, alyssum, lettuce, kale, I think are our main things that we use in our spring containers here. And the first day that we bring them out, we will bring them out for about 3 hours because, you know, think of yourself in you're in Wisconsin, you go to Florida, someplace warm for vacation, you know, you're not used to the sun. So if you just go out on the beach all day, your first day, you're going to get sunburn and, you know, not be very happy. So the same thing can happen with plants with the sun. So we bring them out for like 3 hours, bring them in. The next day we bring them out for 5 hours, then we bring them in, and then leave them out for the whole day, and then we bring them in, and then eventually they go out and stay out. So we watch our nighttime temperatures to make sure they're not getting around freezing. So we usually try to wait until we have a good long stretch of, you know, like 40, lows of 40s at night, before we start bringing stuff out. But it usually takes about a week, and then we can leave stuff out as long as the weather stays warm. If there is a really like cold snap that's coming, we will bring stuff back in overnight if we have room. Otherwise, we'll cover it with Rime outside, so it kind of protects it from the frost. So it usually takes about a week. You know, ideally you don't want to do it on like an 80 degree day of full sun because you're going to really stress them out. So the cloudy, rainy, drizzly days that aren't cold are actually the best to be kind of hardening things off. But, you know, you kind of don't have the time sometimes to listen to Mother Nature and you just have to go with it. So, you know, it is a process. Don't just throw your plants out in full sun their first day out and leave them out, or they won't be very happy.
And they probably will die. So
they probably would die, yes.
So what do you use to cover them if you can't get them back inside?
We use a product that's called Rime. It's just like a kind of a lighter duty fabric. It's a white fabric that comes in a big long roll that we lay on top of the plants. We try to support it so it's not right on the flowers and foliage. We will put it on overnight, but then you try to take it off as soon as possible the next day so the plants can breathe. You definitely don't want it on there more than like overnight if possible. It protects the foliage from getting burned from the sun, but also if temperatures are cooler, it will keep the frost from affecting the foliage. You can get a lot of products that are similar, like garden fabric, I think it's called, or shade fabric at the store, you know, in smaller rolls and quantities, but you can also use like a bed sheet at home. If you have old bed sheets, that's what a lot of ours go towards, our plant covers in the garden when it gets too cold. So, you know, just put it on before you go to bed at night and then just take it off in the morning. So your plants will not get affected by the frost. They also help provide shade in the sunny conditions so they don't get sunburned too.
Yeah, I haven't thought about it that way. I definitely used those sheets.
They work.
They do. We are talking to Lindsay Hendricks, the horticulture manager at the Green Bay Horticulture Garden. What questions do you have now that we're in the gardening season? She can take them all. Join in by calling 800-642-1234. And of course, you can send an email to talk@wpr.org. And this is Garden Talk. I'm Jill Najoe. Stay with us because coming up at noon, we're going to talk about using native plants to bring pollinators to your garden. But right now, we're talking about just spring planting in general. And Lindsay, what are some of the events that you have coming up at the Botanical Gardens in Green Bay?
Yes, we have a lot of new events this year. Our marketing and events team have been doing a really good job of revamping things. So I think our first one coming up next would be Mother's Day. We have Moms and Mimosas. So I believe it's free admission for mothers. And then we have mimosas, a coffee truck coming. And I think they have some like vendors that you can come shop. So it sounds like a really great opportunity to bring your mom to the garden. And in June, we have an event, a new event called Botanica, which is like our previous event called Taste Bud, but like reimagined with a cool new twist of live auctions, some plants that are actually from the garden that were grown in the garden that we're going to have available for sale. And our new exhibit this year that we're doing in-house is called Woodland Wonders. It's a year of celebrating trees and all the beauty and magic that they bring to us. That, I believe, opens May 1st, but our official opening is May 19th. We have a special program where we're highlighting, illuminating the roots of our founders of the garden in a special tribute that they're doing. So I would check out our website at gbbg.org with all the details on that, because a lot of them are new. And I'm not quite sure on all the details yet, just because we've been so busy in the greenhouse. But I know we have a lot of really great programs coming up related to our Woodland Wonders exhibit this year, as well as, you know, some new events and reimagined events that have like a new twist to them to make them way more awesome than they were in the past. So I'm excited to see how everything turns out.
And for those who haven't really gone to a botanical garden, it's way more than just plants and trees. There's so much stuff going on all the time. There's things you can do and classes, and there's always a really nice gift shop.
Yes, we have classes going on throughout the year, a lot of tours, mostly with school, but we have some special like tree tours this summer with the Woodland Wonders exhibit and some special things going on. So we have concerts that go on in the summer too. I think like Thursday nights and Friday nights, depending on the week. So yeah, there's definitely always something going on, and we have a lot of great artwork in the garden this year. Some new like artist installations with the Woodland Wonders theme. So we're really excited to see all those start being delivered next week. So there's always something to do and see. It's not just plants. We have a lot of really great signs that kind of tell stories of some of the different plantings and things going on in the garden. So definitely always something to do and see here.
Definitely. Well, I'm going to try to stop by. It's been way too long. Larry and I are going to be in Green Bay in May 12th having an event. You should come, by the way, okay. Lindsay. You and Mark should come for sure. And just for those who are wondering what we're doing an evening with Larry. And it's going to be May 12th, I believe, 7 o'clock. You can get there by 6:30. Just go to WPR.org/presents. You just scroll down and see until you see Larry's picture. Tuesday, May 12th. It's going to be at the Widener?
Widener
Center in Green Bay. Yep. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So we'd love to see people. There's still spots you can reserve. It doesn't cost anything, but reserve your spot so we know how many people are coming. But anyway, so I'm going to be there that day. And I was thinking, I really need to stop by and see you guys. It's been way, way, way too long. So I'm looking forward to that. So, so hopefully we'll see a bunch of people there too. But let's go to the phones right now. We've got John in Madison who has a question. Go right ahead, John.
Hey, good morning. I just was wondering if it's okay yet to plant my canna bulbs that I took out last fall.
Good question, John. Did you store them like over winter in a bag or box or someplace dark, or are they actively growing in a pot?
Yes. No, I stored them in a box in the basement.
Okay. So what I would recommend, because what we're doing here at the garden, we actually did a couple weeks ago, is if you want to give it a little bit of a head start, is you could plant it into a pot if you have a place that you can keep it where it will be nice and warm and some bright sunlight inside your house. But you do not want to plant that outside until probably end of May, early June, depending what the weather does, because that is a tropical plant. And if it experiences any of this spring weather that Wisconsin is known to have, it will not be very happy. So it's definitely too early to plant it outside, but you can get it going early in a pot inside your house if you have enough room and warmth and sunlight. It'll just give it a little bit of a jump. So when you do plant it outside, you know, it'll get bigger faster. So I would wait until the temperatures, nighttime temperatures, are at minimum in the 50s, just so it doesn't get affected by the cold and start going downhill, and then it will be a little more brown than green, probably.
Which generally is not what you're looking for.
Yes.
What about some of our other bulbs that we plant in the spring, you know, like the dahlias and the lilies, and there's a whole bunch of them. When should we be putting those in the ground?
Yes, that's another great question. So a couple weeks ago, we started up like our elephant ears and our cannas that take a little bit longer to kind of wake up from winter storage. And we put them in a greenhouse. We have a nice, warm, sunny greenhouse, so they get very happy there. But the rest of our summer bulbs, like our dahlias, and we have some pineapple lilies and a whole bunch of random things that I can't even remember because their names are so long and crazy. But we are going to be starting those up next week, because those ones, especially the dahlias, once they wake up, they grow really, really fast. And we don't want them to get so big in the greenhouse that once we get them outside, they just kind of like don't look very good because they get really whacked by the sun and the wind with all that foliage. So we're going to be starting those up this next week in our greenhouse. So we want them to wake up and start growing, but we don't want them to be at their peak when they get outside, because it's an easier transition for them to get into the garden when they don't have as much foliage growing. So those we typically start a little bit later just because they grow so fast. So, you know, usually April is a good time to be starting any of that stuff indoors. Or if you order it from a catalog, they usually ship their bulbs, I think, around the beginning of May, end of April, depending on the zone you live in and where they're coming from. So we typically will put it into a pot, into our greenhouse, and let it start growing. And we try not to plant a lot of those summer bulbs until end of May, just because we know we're less likely to get a cold frost or snow or anything. So that way they won't get set back by any really cold temperatures.
Yes, I ordered some plants, some things that I have a hard time finding around here, and they came last Saturday.
Oh, geez.
Actual plants, not bulbs, but plants. And I'm like, what am I going to do? So anyway, it's been pretty decent down here. So they're on my back porch that faces north, doing pretty well. So,
nice.
Yeah. You just never know when you, they say they're going to send them whenever, you know, your growing zone, they're going to send them, but they're usually a little early. So anyway, if you've got a question for Lindsay, give us a call, 800-642-1234. And of course, you can send an email. That's talk@wpr.org. So let's go to Hilbert, and we've got Pat with a question. Go ahead, Pat.
Hi, I have kind of a disaster here.
Uh-oh.
I can do just fine pruning the shorter ones, but I have a quick fire, and the heads are all big and beautiful up there, but they're too high. I cannot get at them. I'm not going to try to climb anything, and I was wondering how bad will it be if I take my hedge trimmer and just cut where I see a joint or above it, and disregard which way the buds are pointing.
This is a tree hydrangea, Pat?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. So those hydrangeas, you know, you have to prune a little bit differently and more methodically than some of the arborescence types, the little shrubby ones that you can cut back pretty hard every year. So the thing with the quick fire, the panicle hydrangeas, is there's a couple different ways that you can prune them. At the garden, we try to keep them a certain size in some areas because some varieties can get very big. And, you know, if they are out of the reach of where you can prune them, it is okay to prune them back a couple of nodes behind where the flower stalk ends. And here at the Botanical Garden, now that a lot of our hydrangeas are their mature size, we've been kind of keeping them that same size for maintenance purposes. And you can actually prune them back to like one or two nodes above where they were pruned back the previous year. So it doesn't have to be like right below the flower head. If you want to cut them back a little bit farther, you can. As long as you cut it to like a bud that is starting to swell, you should be okay. And you don't really have to worry so much about, you know, which directions the buds are facing on the hydrangeas, because they kind of fill in very nicely, you know, all the way around the plant. So, but if you have branches that end up kind of jutting into the interior of the plant, you typically want to prune those out just to get better airflow into your hydrangea, so it's less likely to get diseases down the road. So there are a lot of really great articles online, and I forget if one of them was on the UW Extension or not, but they do have some really good methods of pruning hydrangeas. The farther you prune them back, they will bloom later, but the flowers will be bigger. And if you prune them back not as much, like right below the flower stalks, you'll have more blooms. They'll bloom earlier, but they'll be like a little bit smaller. So it's kind of up to you and how you want it to look at the end. As long as you don't cut it back to the ground completely, you'll probably be okay. But if you're still waiting to do that, I would do that sooner rather than later, because I know up here in Green Bay, our panicle hydrangea buds are starting to push. So you definitely want to do that pruning before they start taking off and putting all their new spring summer growth out.
So if she does use that hedge trimmer, is that going to cause a problem with a hydrangea tree?
Typically, I don't like using hedge trimmers for artistical pruning like that, as we call it, because we like to do it by hand, so you have more control. Like a hedge trimmer, if you're cutting something like to the ground, is probably okay. But yeah, good point, Jill. I definitely would not suggest using a hedge trimmer on that, because you're going to get some jagged cuts and you might not get the cuts where you want them. So I would suggest sharpening your favorite pruner or lopper and kind of going by it that way, because you'll have more control of what you're cutting and where, and a better end result shape to your hydrangea tree.
Yeah. And Pat, maybe you can get a lopper that's got the extendable arms on it, because those work really, really well. I've got a pair myself, and I really like those. So good luck, Pat. Let's go to Maggie in Kenosha. Go ahead, Maggie.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I planted about 24 canna bulbs last summer, and they came up and grew beautifully. This was at our place in central Wisconsin. Due to the unexpected early snow and heavy snow and then the cold, I never got them dug up. Is there much chance they might survive?
Well, you're central Wisconsin, so I never, you know, there might be a little microclimate down there somewhere, but typically the cannas are like a zone 9 or 10 very tropical plant. So anything that's like zone 9 or higher, you know, can't really handle the freezing temperatures. So even though we got snow, if the ground froze, it's pretty likely that those tubers probably froze as well. But we've been surprised here at the garden with things that we left in the ground that have come back, depending on how mild our winter was or how much snow we had. So I would not count on them coming back, but I also can't say that they won't, because there is an off chance that if conditions were right, you know, some part of those bulbs might be alive still. So, I mean, you can kind of dig around and check to see if they're real, if you remember where you had them, if they are like all mushy and there's not really any substance left to them, then they're dead. But if you kind of dig around and the little tubers feel hard and solid, or maybe are starting to sprout something, you know, then they're alive and you could probably, you know, leave them in and just see what happens. So generally here at the garden in Green Bay, you know, we can't overwinter any of that stuff in the ground. We have to dig it up if we want to save it. So,
Yeah, you never know. I mean, stranger things have happened, but I know when I've forgotten to take things, I always consider it fertilizer.
Yes, you're composting that area with plants that you grew last year.
Expensive fertilizer, but yes, it's fertilizer. So yeah, keep your fingers crossed, Maggie. You never know. It's Mother Nature has surprises for us sometimes.
Yes.
So yeah.
Yes.
So are you looking forward to trying any new plants in the garden this year?
Oh, that's a great question. We always have some new plants that we grow that we haven't grown in previous years. I'm trying to think of, I know there's always like new up and coming plants that we get a lot of our seeds and plugs of plants that we can't grow from seed from Ball Horticulture. And we usually try to get some of the like new varieties of plants coming out. None of those are coming to my mind right now, unfortunately, but I know some of the cool plants that we saw last year that we ordered more of this year. We have these really cool begonias. It's a newer series. It's called Stonehedge. And they, if you know begonia seed, they're teeny tiny little dust particles, but these Stonehedge begonias get like 3-4 feet tall by the end of the season. They're just huge. And we had some last year and we just like fell in love with them. So there's quite a few of us having those in the garden. They're just really cool, big, beefy plants that can handle sun, shade, everything in between. We have some really cool, I call them pokey plants, but they're bed of nails plants that I saved seed from last year. They're a porcupine tomato, I think they're called. They're in like the tomato Solanaceae family. They have some really cool like orange spikes on them that people really went head over heels for last year. We're trying to get a different variety with bigger leaves and different colored spikes. We're not sure if we're going to get that one yet. Some newer varieties of impatiens that are grown from seed that are tolerant of the impatiens downy mildew fungus that can take out your impatien crops. We like lots of impatiens here because it's shade color that you can add, and a lot of the new varieties, the solar scape varieties grown from seed, can also handle sun. So they're very universal in terms of where you can plant them in the garden. So, you know, we always change it up. We always have a lot of the same types of plants like coleus and patiens, petunias, you know, all that. But the varieties and cultivars, you know, change from year to year. And we always try to get the newest, greatest varieties that are out there so we can try them and then also show the public, our visitors, our guests and members, you know, what's all out there on the market, not just what you can get at your local big box nursery that everybody can get. You know, we try to show some of the unique stuff and the new genetics that are on the market.
How do you make that decision? Because I mean, even me going to the garden, you know, the garden store, and it's like, oh my gosh, there's 25 different kind of coleus, and oh, they're all so beautiful, and I have to pick like two.
Yeah.
How do you decide?
Our horticulture team, we do a lot of our planning in, I think now it's more November, December, of picking all of our plants for the coming season. And, you know, we get all these seed catalogs, you know, emails and newsletters, catalogs, you know, all that. So typically when we are designing our areas and making decisions, like it usually starts with like one plant that we've seen in the garden somewhere, in a magazine article, or when we've been visiting other places, like, oh, I really love fishnet stockings coleus, per se. Like, just love the colors, you know, and then you start with that one plant and then you kind of just look online, the catalogs, well, what kind of looks good with that? So, and then you'll start with another plant, like, oh, well, this sun patient, I really like the orange, that color kind of contrasts the fishnet stockings, the green and like the really dark veining in there. So then you pick out your impatient and then you just kind of build off of that. So there are a lot of options out there if you're looking for, say, like a pink petunia. Well, there's probably 100 different types of petunias that have pink, depending on the size you want and what your overall look is. So that's where, you know, we kind of just have to make a decision and pick something sometimes. But when I'm plant shopping for myself, I kind of just go through the nursery, the greenhouse, and I just like to look at everything first before I make a decision, because otherwise you're going to end up buying everything. And some people don't have the time or the room for everything. So I always suggest this before you make your decisions, just like look at all your options and kind of see what jumps out at you and start with that. And then just add plants into the mix, into your container, into your garden bed that complement that one plant that you really, really like. So there are a lot of options out there. I do get very overwhelmed sometimes with all the amount of options. And I'm like, can you just give me like three things to pick from? And I'll pick one of those. When I have 100 different pink petunias, is going to take me a while to find the one that I want. So, but that's the fun. There's so many options out there that you can do something different every year, even if you're using the same type of plant. So
it's nice to know you have the same problem as the rest of us too.
We do. And we probably have more options than a lot of home gardeners, yeah, just with all the different sources that we have to order from.
Yeah. Well, I've kind of found now that if I go there with color combinations in mind and I don't vary, it helps a great deal. So
yes, it always helps to have a list and a vision, or say like the one plant you know you want, and then, you know, kind of go off of there. If you're just kind of like, yeah, I don't know what I want, whatever, you know, that's where you're gonna end up buying a lot more or just not making any decision because you don't know what you want to do. So I definitely start with a basic list and an idea of what you want, or like a picture, and just kind of build off there.
And then you stand in the middle of your yard with this plant going, where am I going to put this? I have no idea.
Yeah, that happens too sometimes. But we always say here at the garden, there's always room for just one more plant.
Always, so always.
Find where that is.
Yes. We're talking with Lindsay Hendricks, the horticulture manager at the Green Bay Botanical Garden. What questions do you have? We got open lines. Lindsay can help you with any of your gardening problems. Or if you've got a comment about what you've got growing and want to tell us about it, we'll be happy to talk about that too. Give us a call, 800-642-1234, or you can send an email to talk@wpr.org. And this is Garden Talk. I'm Jill Najel. Next week on the show, Diana Allfuth will be back to help you with all your gardening questions, as is Lindsay Hendricks here to help you with your gardening questions today. And we've got Suzanne in Madison who has one for you. Go right ahead, Suzanne.
Hi, thank you. I have a climbing hydrangea that has been planted in the same place for 3 seasons, and it was a mature plant before then. I got from another woman, and it does not flower. It's right now, it's got it's growing, climbing on a you know, like a thing that holds it up. I forget what those are called, but
trellis.
And it's climbing above that already. A jillion leaves is a jillion shoots, but I never see any flowers, and it's in about maybe 6 hours of sun a day. And that's all I know, and I wonder if you have any ideas. Thank you.
Well, I have a climbing hydrangea on the side of the cottage, and those things can get pretty obnoxiously big really fast. But my one question for you before is, do you prune it or cut it back at all?
Trim it, did you say?
Yes.
Yeah, do you trim it or prune it back to keep the size in check?
No, I've not done that because it was, you know, for the past 3 seasons, it's been growing from the transplant. So I just left it and...
Okay, because I know the like climbing hydrangeas do flower on like second year wood. So depending how you prune it, if you pruned it, I was going to say you might have been removing the flower buds. But if it's getting enough sun and you're not pruning that off and it's been there for 3 seasons, if you have transplanted it, it could be possible that it's still adjusting to the transplant shock, but 3 seasons seems like it should have been like pushing some flowers out by now. So is it in the ground or is it in a pot?
It's in the ground.
Oh, it is? Okay. I mean, my one thought, Jill, I don't know if you have any experience with these or have like a good answer, but I mean, it might be worth doing like a soil test in that area, because the soil could possibly be a little bit off where the hydrangea isn't getting enough nutrients to produce the flowers. You know, the ones here at the garden, we really haven't had an issue with them not flowering. It's just if we prune them and we prune the flowers off, then we don't have flowers the next season. So, because ours usually get a pretty hard prune every other season or so, just to keep their size in check so they don't take over our buildings that they're on.
It's always a good spot to start with the soil test.
Yeah.
Yeah, we did have a hydrangea expert on last week, but unfortunately we didn't have this question, so I don't know.
Yeah, it looks like that they, it says improper pruning, young age, or lack of sunlight, which are kind of the things that I would assume too, but if it's getting over 6 hours of sun a day, it's been there for three seasons, and you're not pruning it, you know, it should be starting to bloom. So maybe this season you'll get lucky and it will flower for you. But I guess my suggestion, without knowing what's going on underneath the ground, would maybe to do like a soil test. And then that might tell you a little bit more if there's some nutritional deficiencies in there that are causing the hydrangea not to have the energy to put into flower.
Good luck, Suzanne. That is quite the mystery. You're in Madison, so you could also just talk to the extension too and see maybe if Lisa has any help that she can give you on that too. So good luck. Let's go to Vicki in Lake Mills next. Go ahead, Vicki.
Yes, I bought some dahlia bulbs last spring, and I never got around to planting them. They're still in the garage. Can I plant them this year?
Have you checked on the tubers at all? Are they dried up and shriveled up? Or if you touch them, do they feel kind of like a potato that you'd get at the store?
Well, I just opened one up now, and it's all dried up.
Yeah, if they are all dried up, they're probably not viable anymore. But if they feel nice and firm, like a potato that you would buy at the store, then they probably have energy in there. If the dahlia that's, you know, like a potato, any underground storage structure, you know, that's basically a food source for that plant. So if that tuber is just sitting there and the plant is not able to produce new vegetation to create more energy for that tuber, you know, the tuber is just going to kind of keep desiccating, drying up, shriveling up, and then there's really nothing left in there for that plant to grow again. So I'm guessing that they probably won't grow if they're dried up and shriveled up like that. You could throw them in the pot and see if anything comes, but based off of what you said, and since they've spent a season in your garage without having soil or anything, that they're probably not going to be viable, unfortunately.
Thanks for the call, Vicki. Appreciate it. Speaking of bulbs, irises are starting to poke up. Is this the best time to divide them, or should we wait until they finish blooming?
Well, it's one of those things where they typically say you divide the plant in the season opposite that it blooms. So the irises, you know, typically bloom a little bit earlier than some of the other perennials in the garden. So we typically say, you know, do it after they're done blooming. But, you know, you don't always have time to do that. And then you don't want to take a plant and kind of get it all funky looking by cutting it up and, you know, adjusting with the transplant shock. So, you know, if you do it early enough before they start sending up their flower stalks, you'd probably be okay. Like, I'm looking at my own yard right now at home, and I'm like, oh, wow, I have a lot more of these than I thought. Maybe I should lift some of them out or move them around before they start getting too much foliage on them. So I think the best time is usually after they're done blooming, or even in fall, because when you order iris bulbs or tubers, rhizomes from catalogs, they usually send them in the fall, and that's the best time to plant them. So, but you know, now you know where they're growing and where you might have your other clumps, so you can easily see where stuff is. But also, some of your later season perennials aren't really poking out of the ground yet, so you might plant it on top of something that is already there. So my suggestion is waiting till fall when they're done blooming, but if spring is more convenient for you. I'd say by all means do it. Just make sure you water it in good when you're done, so the roots can settle. But spring's a great time for moving stuff around because we typically have a lot more rain and it's cooler, so the plants don't get as transplant shocked as they would like later in the summer, you know, when things are really big and dry and hot.
Although those irises are pretty resilient. I had some that I was going to get to last year and just didn't. And they were just lying out there. And this year they are growing like crazy. They didn't even get planted. So,
yep.
Love those iris. Love those
iris. Me too.
So let's just talk about, we've got a few minutes left, some of the different gardens that make up the Green Bay Botanic Gardens.
Oh, sure. So we have a lot of different formal gardens. They're all named on our map and our website. But each of our, we have five full-time horticulturists here on our staff, and then including myself and our director of horticulture, Mark. So each of our full-time horticulture staff have like assigned garden areas that they're in charge of maintaining. So there's a lot of different spaces there, but some of like the more designated spaces we have, our grand garden area has the biggest concentration of like native plants and pollinator friendly plants in the garden. That's the same area where all of our summer concerts are and a lot of our events and weddings. So that garden changes quite a bit throughout the seasons with different things coming up and being in bloom at different times. And that's one of the areas that we actually, depending on the season and our Garden of Lights event, we will either leave it up and cut it back in spring or we cut it back in fall, but we dice all the pieces of plants into little pieces and we let that be the natural mulch in that area because that garden is very heavy on pollinator habitat, native insect habitat. So that's kind of a fun area. We have like our rose garden, our formal rose garden, which has hundreds of different roses growing in it. So if you love roses, that's the garden for you. We have an herb garden that has a couple different types of styles of herb gardening in there with a whole bunch of different signs on different information and what you can grow. We have a conifer garden, a dwarf conifer garden. So if you want to see a whole bunch of different little conifers and what they can look like once they get a little bit bigger, that area. We have a natural wooded garden that has a lot of spring ephemerals in it, native plants. There's not a lot of flower power in there, but it is a very nice natural area where we have weddings. Our Bell Children's Garden, that is like the biggest, hottest place to be. actually starting yesterday when it was like 70 some degrees out here, we just turned on the water on our splash pad and water features down there. So it's one of the earliest opening splash pads in the area and it closes very late compared to some of the other ones. So it's pretty popular with our family, families in the area and all of our members. So there's a lot of activities for kids down there. So it's a good place for them to go.
Isn't that where the Hobbit House is?
Yep, the Hobbit House restroom is down there. I think it's getting its deep clean this weekend, and then that will be open for the season as well. So when we put that in, it was the time of the Lord of the Rings movies were coming out. So it was kind of built into the side of the house, the hill, like a Hobbit House would be, but it's an actual restroom. So that's pretty cool. So then we have like our shade garden with all of our hostas, and like every part of the garden is different and there's always something to see. Always something is blooming. It's always changing throughout the year too.
Lots of art, a lot of hardscape, little buildings, and so many photo ops too.
Yes, for sure. We're just getting into photo season too. So we'll start seeing the families come out, you know, senior photos start and all that stuff. So there's just lots to see, lots to do, lots to enjoy.
And again, the email or the website to check it out and see all the things.
Yep, is gbbg.org. Say that 10 times fast.
Green Bay Botanical Garden. So gbbg.org. .org. So go there and see all the really cool stuff that they have there. Worth the trip if you don't live locally, for sure. So Lindsay, thank you once again for being with us. And hope we see you on the 12th. If not,
yes.
soon.
Thank you, Jill. Yes, for sure. Let me know when you're out and about, and we'll give you a behind-the-scenes tour.
That would be wonderful. Hopefully we can do that. We have been talking with Lindsay Hendricks, the horticulture manager at the Green Bay Botanical Gardens. Stay with us, because we're going to be talking about how to attract pollinators to your garden, and we'll be back in a bit.